The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest today, return guest, good friend Larry Allen. Larry, welcome back to the show, man.
Mark, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Always a pleasure. For the three people out there who may not know who you are, please tell them who you are and what you do.
These days, I'm running Allen Federal Business Partners, a consulting firm that works with companies to improve their government business. Whether it's market intelligence or compliance or a handoff to somebody in government and industry, that's what Allen Federal specializes in. We've been doing this, Mark, now for almost 6 years, believe it or not.
Yep, and I believe it.
Overall, we have 27 years of experience in the federal government market. A lot of that was with the Coalition for Government Procurement. So a long background in policy, compliance, regulations, things that people don't find sexy, if I may use that word, but nevertheless can trip up a contractor if they're not paying attention.
I need to bring you in the mouse pad I did for my first book. It's a big green number one that says the government market is only sexy if you like money. that's probably the best quote in the first book. But you know, sexy or not, it remains the biggest market in the world. You're on the show regularly because you have your finger on the pulse. And most importantly, because of your contractual bandwidth knowledge, you know where the money is going and, more importantly, why.
Well, there's a lot of that, particularly at the end of the fiscal year, where we are as we put this show together. A lot of trends in terms of what standing contracts are getting money and which ones are not.
So. And for 17, which will be one of the directions of this show, which contracts are liable to start shrinking a little bit and to the benefit of some others.
Nothing stays the same in the government market.
No, it's the perpetual pendulum. But I believe that there is one agency in particular that keeps shooting itself in the foot, but we may name them, we may not, but you know, there's always been foot shooting here on both sides of the fence.
True, very true.
it's not just the govies, folks. We've seen a few contractors aim at their foot and hit their head. So today's newsletter. Newsletter. The week ahead is put out by Allen Federal, allenfederal.com, allenfederal.com. Sign up for the newsletter. There's three items every week that Larry highlights, and these are always issues, and I stress, always issue you need to know about, regardless of the direct or indirect impact on your particular company. You have to understand the nuances of what's going on here if you're going to succeed. But the big item in today's newsletter is the GSA ODC. Please explain why.
Well, Mark, GSA has been working on a way to add other direct costs or ODCs to the schedules program for some time. And it's been an interest for industry, but also for GSA's customers who are looking to use the schedules program, a popular vehicle. But the schedules program hasn't had a way to easily handle other direct costs, non-schedule items, non-schedule issues that go along with a schedule purchase order. If you look at other indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts, much easier to handle those, particularly if they are set up on a cost-plus basis, which the schedule contract is not. So GSA is just out with a proposed rule that attempts to make it easier to justify ODCs on a schedule purchase order. Attempts because I really believe, Mark, that this is a good try by GSA, but it's a proposed rule that's going to have to be tweaked if it's going to meet its stated goal of making this easier. So for thing one in the ODC proposed rule that your listeners need to know about, the proposed rule would allow open market items to comprise up to 33% of a scheduled purchase order. You know, we've been talking about how much is too much for a number of years, Mark, and GSA's put out various guidance. Now they're just saying, hey, look, why don't we make it 33%? So if up to 33% of a scheduled purchase order can be open market or other direct cost type items. So you've got a pretty good definition around that. The second thing it does, though, is it requires a contractor to come up with at least three quotes to try to determine the price reasonableness of that open market portion of the item. Now, one of those quotes can be the quote of a government, of the contractor itself, but they have to go out and then get two other quotes, depending on how specialized the other direct portion of the order is. That could be very difficult to do. The third thing it does...
That seems a little stretched, because if it's not something that's already on schedule, particularly that vendor's schedule, it's almost implied to be somewhat esoteric.
Well, that's exactly right, Mark. And it's not like it's, you know, you can look at three schedule price lists, because as you say, the implication is it's an other direct cost. It's not something you would typically find under a contract. Let's look at the example for travel. That's an easy one. So if my preferred airline carrier for my company is United Airlines, and I've got a deal for United to get from Washington to San Diego, I guess I could look up the airline fees for American Airlines and another, and find out what they're charging to go from Washington to San Diego. But that's, that would be an easy example. But even with that, you can see that that's extra work for a contractor to put together, makes it somewhat less attractive. The second part of that continuum, though, is also true in that it's not just contractors that have to put that stuff together. It's then ordering agency contracting officers that then have to vet the price reasonableness information gathered by the contractor to ensure that, in fact, the ODC items are being offered at a fair and reasonable price. In practice, probably what's going to happen is that the contracting officer is going to take the lowest quote that the contractor offers and says that's reasonable because it's lowest. But the contracting officers, I think, are probably going to have to get their hands around or then their minds around the idea that, look, this is an extra step when assessing ODCs on a GSA purchase order, but it's an extra step that needn't take all that time. The real idea is to establish the fair and reasonable pricing of that open market item, which is a good goal to have. I think that whether we're talking schedules, Mark, or some other government contract program, even if it's a cost-based program, the cost, there's not a whole lot of analysis that always goes into ensuring that the cost that's provided is fair and reasonable. So while this GSA proposed rule probably needs to be tweaked, probably has a few extra hurdles in it, I think generally it's moving in the direction to ensure that when we're talking about non-contract items on a contract PO, we want to make sure that the prices are fair and reasonable. GSA has given people 60 days to comment on this proposed rule, Mark, so it's a major rule. Comments will be due round about the 9th of November.
Are they going to post the comments on a timely basis this time? Because there was some issue with that on some recent past posts.
The Federal Register notice says that there will be timely posting, so we'll have to see. But this is something that, if you've been on the schedules program for any length of time, you know that handling other direct costs has been burdensome. It's in your best interest to understand this proposed rule and comment.
Okay. So get out there and do it, boys and girls. Rather than get into the next topic, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Larry Allen. You can find Larry at allenfederal.com, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. Sign up for the week ahead while you're there, because that's what we're talking. That's one of the things we talk about every time Larry comes in. It won't be the only thing we talk about today. You can also find Larry on LinkedIn, and I suggest you do so. Last week's newsletter had a couple of interesting items I want to touch on, too, particularly while you were selling the new rules. So what new rules, what are they?
Well, there are new rules that, in at least one case, Mark, are pretty sweeping. And if you're, again, a GSA scheduled contractor, there are at least two that are pretty sweeping. But the thing that really struck me about these rules and what made them worthy to write about now was the timing. Here we are in the last 2 weeks of the federal fiscal year, and everybody's out busy trying to transact business. Really, whether you're on the government side or the industry side, government people are trying to get their FY16 dollars out the door. And of course, contractors are hoping that it comes in their door. So there's not a lot of attention being paid to anything other than getting that last year business conducted.
Right.
And on top of that, kind of as a distraction out in left field, suddenly, we had these three rules, regulatory directives dropped. The biggest one, and the one that's been most anticipated, was the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces Act. Not something new in terms of being a discussion item, Mark, but it's now a final rule. And the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces Act essentially requires contractors and their subcontractors to now become somewhat expert in federal labor law to ensure that they are, in fact, in accordance, charging their and paying their employees in accordance with federal labor law. And if they're not, they're supposed to turn themselves in and self-regulate with alleged violations. And that's particularly, I think, a problem for subcontractors, many of whom are small businesses that made a conscious decision not to be a prime because they didn't have the bandwidth, the administrative backbone to handle all of the responsibilities that come with being a prime contractor. And yet, this rule requires them to get those. So, potentially very expensive and a distraction.
Distraction?
And, well, it's one that comes in. It's a distraction now because it's one that's coming in. I suspect they're going to be an awful lot of companies. Look, unless you're a first-tier contractor that has a specialized regulatory compliance branch of your business, you may have read something about the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces Act in a headline. You may hear about it on this show. You're not going to be able to focus on it until the middle of October. And by then, you're going to wake up and go, holy hell, holy mother of the Lord, we need to really focus on this and figure out what this means for our business moving forward. How are we going to deal with this? But that's just one of the rules. If you're a GSA scheduled contractor, GSA dropped the final version of its transactional data reporting rule, TDR.
Oh, yeah, my favorite.
Right. And this creates a whole new data submission, data collection and submission burden for GSA scheduled contractors. GSA is rolling the...
Did you say burden?
Burden, yes. It's a burden, a significantly increased burden in terms of the types of data you as a contractor must retain and then submit on a monthly basis to GSA. GSA is rolling this out now as a pilot program, but it's a pretty significant pilot running across multiple schedules. Parts of schedules,
most importantly, 70.
Some of the larger special item numbers on schedule 70, absolutely, already being rolled out on our favorite office product schedule 75.
Yep.
And again,
which has already lost hundreds of contractors,
business is down. Let's load it up with a brand new reporting requirement, see how that goes.
Brain surgery at work.
And particularly, you're looking at the office supply schedule, Mark, that has lots of transactions. That's the nature of that business.
Right.
And now if you're a 75 contract holder, you have to collect and remit information on every one of those scheduled sales transactions to GSA.
I bet Office Depot and Staples are going, oh boy.
Yeah, they're right on top of it. And with the ultimate idea that that data would become part of a prices paid database that government agencies would be able to use to compare prices when they're contemplating their own purchases. I understand that the database is not being put together as quickly as people might have hoped for inside GSA.
I'm shocked.
So it could be a little bit delayed in actually getting up and running. Nevertheless, the final rule is out, and the transition process for the pilot for the first 7 or 8 schedules has now been posted, and it will be between now and November when a number of these contracts are supposed to be transitioned over. Now, of course, the caveat with that is you, under this pilot, will no longer have to track your most favored customer price reductions clause issue, which has been onerous for a number of companies, Mark. Mm-hmm. It is, however, the devil you know, or you're supposed to know.
Right.
And this whole transactional data rule, the reporting of all of your sales data, you know, look, that's going to be subject to audit. It's going to be subject to whistleblower allegations. And we're in somewhat uncharted waters in terms of what type of legal decisions and precedents could come down that will eventually pave the highway on which this type of information will be submitted. So that's the second rule.
Quick comment on the TDR. The TDR is the one where I started getting emails from people saying, we posted our comments there, but they aren't showing up. And it was like 2 weeks ago when I posted this comment. So we started tweeting about it, me and a few other people, and all of a sudden, you know, like 4 days before the rule went into effect, the comments were up.
Right.
So I personally find that bothersome.
Well, you know, GSA people sometimes have to be encouraged to actually post comments, particularly comments that
aren't nice,
that are counter to the position that the agency has taken. You know, without going into specifics, this has been a discussion.
Is this why Mary Davy never allows comments on her blog posts?
I can't speak to that specifically, but you know, there are others, including myself, who have had discussions with GSA leaders about the terrible optics it sends to encourage people to comment, and then dissenting comments are put into a hamper somewhere and never seen the light of day. Hopefully that message has now been received, and
we can do a whole show on it.
The actions altered accordingly. The last rule that I wrote about is a OMB directive that requires federal agencies to share up to 20% of their software code, open source software code developed by a contractor with other government agencies. So if you're a government agent, if you're a government contractor working with your client on developing open source software code, what a generous organization you are, Mark, because not only are you providing open source code under a contract, hey, up to 20% of what you did for somebody else is now going to be available for sharing with other government agencies. And you don't get compensated for that.
What's the rationale? I mean, I can kind of see a rationale for this.
Right. Well, open source, trying to make sure that people have a common backbone. On the other hand, to me, if it's a contractor-developed piece of software code that they got paid for by a specific agency, look, that's how I make my living as a contractor. You're going to share up to 20% of that with 20 other people? Well, where's my residual for that? My intellectual property.
I work with some small contractors that develop very particular code around some niche stuff, you know, like fleet management, right?
Right.
And literally this could kill their businesses.
Well, right. And I think, as usual, this is a broad pronouncement that was agreed upon among a very small group of people. It's not unique to software. We've seen this happen in the military where, you know, you get in and you talk to your usual suspects and everybody signs off on it. And suddenly it's a broad-based policy that affects everyone. And whoa, not there are people who are outside the usual suspects who have a real problem with that, but nobody inside government talked to those people. So you either have to backpedal or you run the risk of jeopardizing the livelihood of some of your supplier base, often an important part of your supplier base. And so, too, might be the circumstance here, Mark.
Indeed. You bring up sequester again. I thought this was behind us, Larry.
The S word in government contracting. There was an article in one of the trade journals, Mark, about the possibility of sequestration. And I looked at it. In a normal world, Mark, the overall chances of a sequestration happening in FY17 are small. Possible, but small. However, this isn't necessarily a normal world. We have, between now and the end of the calendar year, presidential election, everybody in Congress and a third of the Senate up for election. And depending on how those elections go, lame duck members of Congress, lame duck senators may decide that they want to use the sequestration hammer as a way to send a parting shot to people who have put them out of office, perhaps. Right now you've got budget proposals in the House and the Senate. The Senate budget caps, their proposals would not trigger a sequestration. They're below the trigger levels. The House proposals are a little bit over, and if they're not changed, then the House levels would trigger a sequestration should they prevail. However, look, there's a lot of time between now and then. If you've got cooler heads prevailing, people who understand that the government has to stay open and appropriate and do things that are necessary for small things like national security, then you won't have a sequestration. On the other hand, if you've got people who want to send a political parting shot on their way out of Washington into whatever consulting gig they're going to get, yes, this is a possibility.
They're going to get consulting gigs?
Well, I find that, you know, the most representatives from the 11th District of Arizona, not to pick on them, but never really fully understand the benefits of going back to the 11th District of Arizona, but Bethesda looks mighty good.
You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Larry and I will be back after this. Larry and I are taking our show on the road. We're going to be doing shows in Vegas and Atlantic City. Back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Too bad you weren't here during the break. We got quite interesting between takes here. I'm here with Larry Allen. It always gets interesting between breaks, but frankly, it's interesting for what airs as well. So, Larry, there was one other item last week that I really wanted you to talk about. In addition to the transactional data reporting, GSA has an oil additive, FPT. So what is this, and what impact's coming down the road here?
Mark, this is GSA's formatted pricing tool, and it, as you inferred, it comes right on the heels of the transactional data reporting rule and the pilot for that being rolled out. The formatted pricing tool is something that GSA is looking at as the next step of their price flattening initiative. You know, you and I have talked on this show before about GSA's desire to remove what it sees as unnecessary, unrealistic range of prices for the same or similar items. And to be fair to GSA, sometimes they find things that really should be differently priced. There are people out there who haven't paid as much attention to their pricing on GSA Advantage as they probably should have, and you got an old price up there that's way higher than everybody else is charging. So, you know, born of that good intent to make sure that everybody's pricing is current and accurate and actually reflects the current dynamics of the market, which is all good stuff, is the formatted pricing tool, which kind of takes this to the next level. And I guess the best way to understand it, Mark, is if you have five companies on a GSA schedule with the same or similar items, none of those companies are going to have the same pricing strategies. Some are going to price certain items lower. Some are going to price them a little bit higher, all with an idea that they know what the proper inducement is to get their customer in the door. So while, you know, you might have a loss leader for, let's say, you know, 10 screwdrivers, I might have a loss leader for my set of hammers, and somebody else could have a loss leader for, you know, pliers or wrenches. And yours and my prices on pliers and wrenches are about the same, but the other person's prices on hammers are way higher than mine.
Yeah.
And to GSA, that looks fishy. You know, why would somebody else charge $20 extra for a hammer when it's a hammer? Well, the reality is that different companies set their price strategies differently depending on how they want to go to market, depending on what they think is going to sell, and depending on the unique parts of their customer base. You and I might be in the same market. We might have overlapping customers, but we're going to also have different customers, customers that we really know and specialize in, and we price accordingly. The real issue with the formatted pricing tool is it takes all of that market price discretion away from contractors. So that whatever, if I've got a loss leader price for a hammer, that's now going to become the price for a hammer for everybody. If you have a loss leader price for a screwdriver, same thing. Our mysterious third friend who's got the low price on pliers, that's going to be the plier price. And in price flattening all this stuff out, what you're really doing is running the risk of making the GSA schedule, at least for products, really unprofitable. We're not talking about small margins, but what we're talking about is
non-margins,
instances where if the GSA really is finding somebody offering a loss leader and they expect that to be the price for everyone, well, you know, not everybody can offer the loss leader price all the time and stay in business. And that's a real risk with the formatted pricing tool.
It's also a real risk for resellers that don't really have a strong handle on controlling the price to begin with.
Well, right. That's true, too. And the other issue with formatted pricing tool is who gets to decide what's similar? I mean, obviously, if we both have, you know, product XYZ123 that's a hammer on our contract, you know, that's one thing that you can do price analysis on. But, you know, if I have a slightly different hammer on my contract or a slightly different widget, who's to say that that's similar or the same? It might be for a different part of the market. Formatted pricing tool is going to attempt to take the nuances out of the differences between those similar items with the GSA software that runs the formatted pricing tool, making the distinctions. And if you've got a higher priced, slightly better hammer, then you're going to be asked to reduce your price to the lower priced version or risk losing that item from being on your schedule contract. So I think the formatted pricing tool was born out of good intent, the intent to make sure that we have current prices on the schedule contract and that agencies are buying things at competitive prices so that you don't have people who are real outliers trying to overcharge something. So the intent is good. But like a lot of things, Mark, the pendulum never stops halfway. And my concern and the concern of others in industry is that the pendulum now will swing to the other extreme so that there is little or little, if any, opportunities to differentiate legitimate differences between similar items so that, you know, it's either the cheapest or it's not on contract. And we've already seen quality companies like 3M reassess their GSA schedule presence. So are you going to be able to find hammers and other items on schedule? Sure. They're going to be from anybody that you've ever heard about? I'm not so sure about that.
Would you be able to use them a second time?
Right.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. So these are things that have to be considered. There also had been some issues with the earlier beta version of the formatted pricing tool. I've been told that these may or may not have been totally ironed out. But, you know, one of the things in the beta version, and I mentioned it earlier, you and I have a hammer XYZ123. Well, that's manufacturer part number. Well, guess what? Some other manufacturer in the scientific laboratory equipment business has a Erlenmeyer flask at XYZ123, and it pulls the part number, and suddenly, you know, that's comparing hammers to Erlenmeyer flasks, which makes it a little bit more difficult for the customer to understand exactly what's going on here. So hopefully that's an issue that's been addressed.
We can hope, but I'm not going to go there. All of this kind of ties into where I wanted to take this discussion anyway, and that's the FY17 planning, not just for large companies, but, you know, for the, I do advise a couple of large firms, one Fortune 75 style company, but I'm not brought in for what I'm going to talk about right now or what I'm going to ask about right now. And that's the planning sessions for 17. So for smaller and mid-size, each of these issues comes into play directly or indirectly or like a sledgehammer on your laptop. The impact is real. How often are you asked, as you know, Larry and I are both advisors to the market. Okay. How often are you asked to come in to advise companies on moving forward, particularly, after wrapping up an end of FY?
Sometimes, Mark, but not as often as I think I should be, particularly by clients that I have standing arrangements with. One client comes to mind immediately for a recent discussion that I had with a number of people from the client company. We were talking about the beginning of FY17. This is an excellent segue into the general discussion. Look, there's been an awful lot of ink, digital or otherwise, committed to the idea that FY17 is going to be a great business year for government contracts. Been a lot of speculation that some of the spending caps are going to be eased, we won't have a sequestration, that there'll be more disposable income. Well, Mark, in an ideal world, that might be the case. But as we referenced earlier in this show, this is an election year. And, you know, there is every reason to expect and believe that we will start the FY17 government year with a continuing resolution.
I'm shocked.
Which means the government gets to stay open, but no new starts. What do I mean by no new starts? Well, that new project that you and your customer wanted to work on, the new project you had in your pipeline for not just Q1, but even for Q2, may not get done because the length of the continuing resolution could be quite substantial. I was talking just earlier today with a senior-level DOD person, and he and I were speculating that it's entirely possible we could have a continuing resolution into the spring of 2017. That would encompass a minimum of 6 months of the FY17 fiscal year. If you're a company that's forecasting significant year-over-year growth from 16 to 17, what I just told you should really not make you happy.
Right. And you know, if you're a large company, probably means you're public. So, you know, you're going to be hammered a different way. But if you're a small or medium-sized company and that work is put off for 3, 6, or many more months, that's, you know, that's bread and butter.
Right. And it's the type of information, Mark, that outside market experts like you and I have. This is the world in which we operate. You know, we tend to look at these things while while our clients are busy doing business, which is exactly what they should be doing. But occasionally, if you want to make sure you're going to be able to keep doing business or calibrate a reasonable expectation for your future business, it's good to pick the heads of people like you and me who are outside the companies. We're not an echo chamber, and we have been looking at this stuff and paying attention. And that type of insight, while it may not particularly be well received, is nevertheless vital in order for accurate business planning.
Right. So outside the box requires someone who lives outside the box. Thinking requires someone who lives outside the box to provide that view. We're going to take a quick break, come back to this very topic. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back in a minute with Larry. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Larry Allen. We've gone through a litany of things, the Fair Pay, Safe Workplace, TDR, sequester, the formatted pricing tool, the ODC, all of which impact virtually everything you're going to be doing or want to do in FY17. I want to clarify one point right here. If you need an outside advisor for the contractual side of the universe, which contracts are going to work best for you? How do you exploit your current vehicles or get added to new vehicles? I'm not that person. Larry is that person. If you need advice or an outside point of view, and I'm not an ad agency, but I provide this perspective on the marketing side of what you're doing to maximize ROI on your GWACs, your IDIQs, your MACs, or your schedules, I am that guy.
Experienced one at that.
Yeah, I don't believe I have a peer as far as experience goes. AmTower and Company has been around for 31 years, almost 32 at this point, and I do nothing but watch what works in marketing in the government market, and then I run my mouth on this show with people who are much brighter than me, like Larry, which is why this show is key, because I bring in the best minds for particular topics in this market on this show. So, Larry, I said at the end of the last segment, outside the box thinking requires having someone from outside the box who lives outside the box as the advisor. And I'm kind of surprised that the companies you have on retainer don't bring you in for this end of FY thing. But I do a lot of spot work in the fall, usually somewhere between 6 and 10 gigs, going in, talking about what the marketing is. The overall, I'll do the 25,000 foot view. Here are the contracts. Here's what's working. Here's the areas you need to think about. But I'm not going to take a deep dive on the contractual side. I only do that from the 25,000 foot view. But when it comes to marketing tactics on how to, make money from these vehicles, I definitely have a few opinions. But I'm puzzled as to why more companies don't call you and say, hey, can you come in for a half day and we'll pay you X numbers of millions of dollars?
after two of which I could retire and move to Tahiti.
And get a new kitchen.
I think, Mark, some of it comes from the fact that most of the companies that both you and I work with are inherently commercial companies in nature, and we're maybe working with the federal division or, now the federal broom closet in some cases if some companies have made a decision to downsize their direct federal presence. So it's important information to know, but it may not be something that they automatically think to ask for. But nevertheless, it is important to talk to people who understand what's going on here. In the past, I've spoken to dealer networks, given them the type of shakedown on this. And, that proves to be very helpful for those people. Some of my companies, some of my member companies, they know they've got other people who do their forecasting, so they don't necessarily need me for that. But there are a number of them
The forecasting, it reminds me of a call or a conversation I had a long time ago with Max Peterson. He was then with CDW. And, they on the commercial side, they could predict literally hour by hour what was going to happen. Right. And they expected him as vice president of federal sales to do the same thing.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that highlights the contrast. You know, people assume that this is going to mirror commercial market business practices, and that's why they don't ask. But of course, we know that that's not usually the case, and that selling in the federal market is very different. I also run into the situation, Mark, where people are looking quarter by quarter at their business. And what I really advise people is, look, I understand that. I'm a small business, the second small business that I've run, both of them successfully, thankfully. So I get the need for cash flow, but I also get the need to stop and put your head up every now and then to take a look at the landscape around you. You don't want to be the Bugs Bunny character that took the wrong turn at Albuquerque and suddenly your business is out in the middle of the desert, not where you thought it should be.
Not in Palm Springs, right?
Yeah. Right.
Wrong desert. So, but again, you know, especially with all these things coming down the pike, schedule vendors, TDR, if you have access to or own a part of SOUP, CIOCS, or maybe an agency MAC, why wouldn't you drive your 70 traffic that way and avoid this TDR thing?
Well, I think that if you're a multi-line company that has a lot of line items on your schedule contract, you want to look long and hard at what the reporting means for you as a company. Not just the reporting itself, Mark. People can say, oh, we can put the infrastructure together to do the reports. It may not be that different from the software we already have. Okay, fair enough. But understand that, you know, this is a formal data submission you're making to the government. If it's not accurate, current, and complete, or even if it is, it can still be audited by the GSAIG to ensure that its accuracy and completeness. It's a new era and a new area for everyone, so people aren't really sure what the guidelines are. Similarly, look, people are going to say, oh, my risk of audit's small. Okay, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That's luck of the draw. But if there's a lot of money in here, if there's a lot of data that's being reported, that's a definite target for a whistleblower. And you and I both know that the majority of GSA contract enforcement cases today are whistleblowers.
Right.
And if you're taking away the opportunity for a whistleblower to file a price reductions clause case because you don't have a most favored customer anymore, it's not like those people are going to suddenly go into night dancing. You know, they're going to look to see the next way they can blow the whistle on you, and that's going to be around the data that you're submitting pursuant to this transactional data reporting rule.
Yeah, and both of us have seen whistleblowers who can retire after a successful case.
So, yeah, oh yes.
And you know, I don't want to say that all whistleblowers are disgruntled, but there are certainly a few instances where that has occurred.
Certainly a few cases where people have looked at the 401k, decided it wasn't doing well, and just the rolling the whistleblower dice better odds than going to Vegas and doing the same.
Right. So I want, we have a couple minutes left. I want you to give three reasons why a company should bring Larry Allen in for an FY17 planning session, your advice during a FY17 planning session.
Right. Well, first, I appreciate the opportunity, but first, I think it's important to understand that it's not necessarily that I'm smarter than my clients. It's not necessarily that I'm smarter than you. It's just that I look different places than my clients look. I have a different focus, a different perspective. That different focus and perspective gives me a different set of knowledge than my clients have, and that can be put to their use for the betterment of their government business. Second, I don't have an axe to grind. I'm going to tell you what it is that is happening. And I have 27 years of looking at this. I started this business.
You don't have a dog in this
fight. I don't have a dog in the fight. I don't have a government contract. Mm-hmm. I started this business on Capitol Hill in this business on the Hill. So I have firsthand congressional budget knowledge. I understand the process, understand how it works. And the third, if for no other reason, is I've got an established track record of companies who are very happy with the services I've provided, some of whom are top 10 government contract holders. And they're the ones that do ask me the most questions and get the most benefit because they understand best what I have to offer.
So, and that helps them stay in that top 10 category.
Well, it helps them stay competitive, gives them a little bit of an edge.
Right. There you go. Larry, always a pleasure. This was really fun today.
Mark, it was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. I hope your listeners got something useful.
If they didn't, they weren't listening. So, you've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is not my day job. I just told you what my day job is. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government. Give me a call, Mark at federaldirect.net. Look me up on LinkedIn. Look Larry up on LinkedIn. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.